As you know, things have been busy at the Federal Reserve, and there's a lot I could talk about this afternoon. And sometimes in a position like mine, you get an invitation and then you realize that the speech is at the most inopportune time, and therefore you're going to give a talk about your most recent summer vacation or something that's totally off subject. But this afternoon, I think I have a pretty good sense of what's likely to be on your minds, and I'm going to focus on that. During my remarks, I'd like to talk about the economy, about recent Federal Reserve actions, and about the economic outlook. And I will close with a few thoughts that are really guiding fundamentals for policy in these challenging economic times. I should say, and this is the usual disclaimer that we all make, these are my views alone. I don't necessarily speak for any of my colleagues at the Federal Reserve or members of the Federal Open Market Committee. In the past few weeks, many have asked if the economy is in a recession. We don't yet have enough hard evidence to answer according to the technical definition of recession that's actually declared by the National Bureau of Economic Research. That group is charged with making the determination by looking at quite a number of economic indicators. By the way, that declaration of a recession is usually long after a recession, many months after a recession. It is a look back on the business cycle using those indicators. Also, we have not yet recorded two straight quarters, or even one quarter yet, of real contraction, that is negative gross domestic product growth, which is the popular definition of recession. In fact, the most recent quarter, and this information was confirmed this morning, actually remained positive. That would be the fourth quarter of 2007, of course, which grew at a rate of 0.6%. So technically, it's too early to say. That said, it's clear the economy is in a slowdown, and that slowdown resembles past periods that were on the leading edge of a recession. Economic growth has been slowing since the third quarter of last year, coming off growth rates in the second and third quarter, very strong growth rates in the second and third quarter, between 4 and 5%. Following a sluggish fourth quarter, I expect that gross domestic product, GDP, for the first quarter of this year will show little, if any, growth. Also, personal income growth has been flat, and there's been significant softening of employment, manufacturing activity, and sales at the retail and wholesale level. Indeed, some areas, such as employment, actually have been contracting. Job growth in recent months was negative, and the unemployment rate has moved up to today 4.8%, compared to 4.5% last summer. It's possible, given certain strengths, such as strong business balance sheets and export growth, that the economy will not pass the threshold into a technical recession. I should comment parenthetically that in anecdotal feedback I get from the corporate sector, I do get a sense, and I think this is some reason for comfort, that corporate America actually is quite strong and resilient. Balance sheets have been strengthened over the last several years. Cost structures have been worked on very vigorously by business executives. So our overall corporate sector, I think, is in a good position to deal with a weaker economy. So as I said, it's possible because of strong balance sheets and export growth, the economy will not pass the threshold into a technical recession. In considering the current economic situation, I believe that an important policy objective at this juncture is to ensure that this slowdown is short and shallow. That was a tough sentence when we were drafting this. My helper said, "Can you actually say slowdown that is short and shallow in one sentence?" Pull it up. critical factor, possibly the critical factor in the determination of the length and the depth of the current slowdown, is the performance of the housing sector. Nationally, house prices in 2007 declined by 10.7% from January 2007 to January 2008, according to the most recent S&P Case-Shiller Home Composite Price Index, which evaluates 20 major metropolitan areas in the United States. Of course, local results may differ, and we were talking about that during the meal part of the lunch. And Chattanooga area home prices, for instance, last year were still rising during part of the year, but at a slower rate. On average, across the country, home prices have declined, and in some markets, quite substantially. The number of housing starts and new home sales has fallen and are at less than half their respective peaks. Unfortunately, cutbacks in construction have made only a small dent in builders' elevated supplies of unsold homes. Now around 10 months' supplies at the current pace of sales, and up from the average for the past decade of around 4 months. So we have a housing inventory overhang nationally that clearly has to be worked off before the economy, in my opinion, will stabilize. Housing weakness has weighed on growth in other sectors. For instance, the retail segment of the commercial real estate sector has weakened, according to anecdotal information, at least. As we know, retail development tends to follow rooftops. Also, problems with subprime mortgages have led to tighter credit conditions that have restricted mortgage financing, placing further downward pressure on housing activity. With regard to financial conditions more broadly, markets have not yet stabilized. Although financial instability originated in the residential mortgage-backed securities market, it has spread to affect a variety of credit markets via market linkages or institutional interdependencies. The experience has been traumatic, at times generating what you might call primal emotions, emotions such as fear, distrust, flight to safety. I emphasize this point because financial system stability is a central focus of Fed policy at the moment. At the same time, inflation has become a more prominent concern. Price pressures have been most obvious in energy and commodities, including commodities in the food chain. High and rising inflation, if allowed to persist, can distort household and business behavior. Both what we call headline and core inflation measures have been elevated in recent months and above a level I would consider in the long run to be consistent with the objective of price stability. Even when inflation abates, shifts in relative prices of goods, such as increases in energy costs, if sustained, can cause painful dislocations that force households to adjust living patterns and companies to change their practices and even their business models. Today, the U.S. economy faces challenges on three fronts. First, weakening growth. Second, unstable financial markets. And third, elevated inflation and heightened uncertainty about the inflation outlook. To address these issues, the Fed has two basic sets of tools. At the macroeconomic level, there is traditional monetary policy. And at the level of specific financial markets, there are various liquidity measures. Changing the federal funds rate target, which is the main monetary policy tool, supports macroeconomic goals, sustainable economic growth, and stable prices. This tool changes the overnight interbank price for money. In recent months, the Fed has repeatedly lowered the Fed funds rate, which was 5.25% last September, At our most recent meeting, March 18th, the Fed cut the federal funds rate target by 75 basis points, an unusual amount by historical standards, to 2.25%. This action was taken in response to the weakening outlook caused by tightening credit conditions and the deepening of the housing contraction. Changes in the federal funds rate can influence, but not dictate, other interest rates in credit markets. There is not a one-to-one correspondence between changes in the Fed funds rate and longer-term interest rates for borrower classes that are critical to the economy. For instance, while the Fed funds rate has declined 300 basis points in the past 7 months, the rate for conventional 30-year mortgages has declined about 65 basis points, and the yield on a AAA corporate bond has declined only 41 basis points. In addition, the ability of reductions in the Fed funds rate to address liquidity strains in credit markets has proven to be limited. The continuation of these liquidity strains presents a serious potential risk to the financial system. As a result, the Fed in recent months has undertaken additional steps to directly improve liquidity conditions in key credit markets. Federal funds rate changes determine the size of the Fed's balance sheet, the foundation of the money supply. The Fed's liquidity tools work primarily by changing the composition of the asset side of the Fed's balance sheet. For example, by temporarily exchanging some currently illiquid assets for some more liquid assets, the central bank can mitigate some of the pressures that have prevented credit markets from functioning smoothly. A listing of recent liquidity actions can sound like an alphabet soup. We have the TAF, or Term Auction Facility, which was announced December 12th. The TSLF, the Term Securities Lending Facility, which was announced March 11th. And most recently, the PDCF, or Primary Dealer Credit Facility, announced March 16th, to allow certain non-bank financial institutions to borrow from the Fed. Each of these measures are simply extensions of the traditional tools of the Federal Reserve, the discount window and open market operations. Collectively, the four major liquidity-oriented programs had the following elements: lengthening the term of lending, broader types of collateral, a wider set of counterparties, and a lower premium for the primary credit rate, or the discount rate, which is the rate at which the Fed lends directly to banks through the discount window. These Fed liquidity actions can be likened to a surgeon's instruments designed to get at precisely the problem at hand and no more. Also, the Fed's liquidity actions can be viewed as a complement to monetary policy, a point which was made in the Federal Open Market Committee statement following the March 18th meeting. I quote, "Today's action, combined with those taken earlier, including measures to foster market liquidity, should help promote moderate growth over time and to mitigate the risks to economic activity." That was part of the statement on March 18th. A week ago Sunday, the acquisition of Bear Stearns by J.P. Morgan Chase was announced. Earlier this week, the deal was changed from the original $2 per share to $10 per share, and certain specifics were adjusted. To facilitate this transaction, the New York Federal Reserve Bank, through a limited liability company formed for this purpose, will take control of a portfolio of assets valued at $30 billion as of March 14th. J.P. Morgan Chase will bear the first $1 billion of any realized losses in this portfolio, and any gains will accrue to the New York Fed. This arrangement was undertaken with the full support of the U.S. Treasury. This action was taken to bolster market liquidity and promote orderly functioning of short-term funding and credit risk markets. As I said earlier, financial stability must be a central concern at this time. The Fed has taken strong measures to avoid potential damage to the broader economy. Looking ahead, my forecast has been affected both by an economic slowdown that was sharper than I expected and expected in the first week in January, and the recurring spells of financial market turmoil. A few months ago, our forecast at the Atlanta Fed saw growth slow in the first half of 2008, then picking up in the second half of the year. But it now appears to me that the contraction in housing and the dampening effects of financial turmoil on household and business spending could persist through the remainder of the year. The recovery and growth that I expected in the second half of this year may be delayed. The tax rebates should provide some stimulus in the second and early third quarters of this year. But given the uncertain atmosphere I expect will continue to prevail in May and June, I do not expect full flow-through of the rebates into personal consumption expenditures. I expect it will take much of the rest of the year for house prices to bottom out and financial markets to restore the necessary preconditions of stability, that is, confidence in asset values and confidence in transaction counterparties. Looking ahead further to 2009, my outlook becomes more optimistic. It will take longer than I earlier expected to return to solid growth, but by the fourth quarter of 2008, the conditions should be in place to support a return to healthy growth next year. With regard to the inflation outlook, I've learned not to be dismissive of inflation risks in this era of surging global demand for commodities. Having said that, my expectations are still in accord with the FOMC statement of March 18th that inflation should moderate in coming quarters. This moderation reflects a projected leveling out of energy and other commodity price increases and the impact of generally weaker demand conditions in the economy. In any event, it will be necessary to continue to monitor inflation very carefully. As I said earlier, the U.S. economy faces challenges on three fronts: growth, inflation, and financial stability. I'd like to close by grounding my remarks in what I believe are some guiding fundamentals appropriate for this challenging period. Integral to the Fed's dual mandate of maximum sustainable economic growth and stable prices is the goal of financial stability. Orderly markets and the flow of credit to businesses and households are necessary for sustained prosperity in all sectors of the economy, not just Wall Street. My view of recent Fed interventions is that they are an attempt to preserve or restore normal market functioning. I'm aware that there are risks inherent in these actions. The line that separates restoring market function from merely redistributing losses and gains is not a bright one. This is the reason that policymakers only rarely and reluctantly intervene in markets. Also, the distinction between liquidity problems and insolvency is not a trivial one when monetary authorities respond to troubles of market players. The critical evaluation is the systemic risk posed by the failure of an institution. Some believe the Fed has overreacted. Others have said that the central bank has been slow to respond to building problems. And still others have warned that the Fed has crossed lines that define appropriate function. From where I stand, Fed actions were taken with a prudent acknowledgement of the unintended consequences that accompany almost all policy interventions. The actions taken by the Federal Reserve over the past several months, and especially the past several days, were taken in perilous and fast-moving circumstances. Given the likelihood of continued financial and economic uncertainty, the public authorities charged with achieving and maintaining financial stability must preserve the capacity to act decisively in the best interest of the economy as a whole. And I believe the Fed has done that. Thank you very much for your attention, and I would welcome any questions or comments.